absolute clarity is the one thing people are searching for. And whilst that's very difficult to come by, the communication and the taking people on the journey is part of that. So communications has to be involved from the very, very beginning.
You are listening to the Stream UK and Allison & Partners podcast.
Are you one of the 37% of UK adults who worked from home during the pandemic? Then chances are you've started having conversations with your employer about your future of work. Some offices are calling for all workers to return, while others are attempting to negotiate a rarely before tried system of hybrid work. With so many potential options and pitfalls, this summer's lifting of COVID-19 restrictions presents a major challenge for internal communications professionals. Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Stream UK, a monthly podcast from Allison & Partners. We're here to provide you with the best insights and analysis from the world of marketing and communications. This month, we're focusing on the challenges businesses face as they design and roll out their future of work, and also on the potential rewards for not just getting it right, but communicating it successfully to their employees and the wider industry. This month, I sat down with our very own Jim Selman, partner and managing director of UK and Ireland, to get his thoughts. I started by asking him to look back on last summer's Back to the Office campaign and what worked and what didn't.
It was a really interesting time in many ways, partly because, of course, the push back to the office never really ever happened for a lot of businesses, including ours. But when I think about us preparing for that moment, I think the sort of logistical and operational side was relatively straightforward. And obviously, we partner in our office with another MDC agency. I think as a global holding group, we had really good knowledge, expertise to share on measures and how to keep everybody safe. And I think from that point of view, even though we ended up not using the office, we were well prepared and actually still are for the hopeful eventual return that's coming at the end of the coming summer. I think not returning to office, not returning to the office eventually, you know, it's an interesting issue for us as a business. We, when you look back at the last year and a half, have had an extraordinarily fortunate time in terms of our business continuity, our ability to operate, our performance as a company. You know, we haven't had to make any difficult decisions. We've had some really good wins. As a business, we've been able to sustain ourselves very well. But there are those things that are less easy to quantify that do potentially get impacted by being away from each other and not being able to get back to the office. And I think it's some of those softer sides to being in an office and being an office-based business around our culture, around our relationships with each other, around the sort of verb of apprenticeship, around how people learn. Because obviously, communications and marketing, so much of what we do and how we get good at what we do is by following and listening to others who've done it before us. And obviously, doing that in a virtual environment is very hard. So I think that those have all suffered. And I think also, work-life balance has been this strange continuum throughout, where I think there have been some real benefits to work-life balance as a result of remaining virtual, and some real struggles too. I think getting our commutes back twice a day has been a great thing in many ways, to be able to spend more time either looking after ourselves or the people that we're close to. And at the same time, it's been tougher to work out when the working day should begin and end. So I think it's been a really interesting double-edged sword, actually, that the opportunity to work from home. And I think we're yet to truly understand whether it's been a wholly good thing or a wholly difficult thing.
Now, something that I find interesting to talk to people about is how the communications from the government have differed throughout different periods of the pandemic, especially here in the UK. I mean, a key challenge, and this goes for both government and businesses, is how to ensure consistency when things are changing all the time. So why, in your opinion, does consistency in communications matter? And how can businesses best deal with rapidly changing situations like this one, but also potentially other ones that might come up in the future?
Yeah, this is the million-dollar question. It's really, really interesting. Of course, for us as communicators, consistency is absolutely everything. Telling a consistent story and maintaining that is a source of trust building. It's how we build credibility for clients through narrative and storytelling that is created and maintained in a consistent way. Now, that comes up against quite a significant barrier in a situation like COVID, which is wholly unprecedented and is literally changing all the time. I mean, as you and I speak here today, our idea that we would return to the office first week in September is certainly now under the microscope because of the spike in infections over the past few days. And so you sort of have this academic point of view of consistency that's really important for comms, coming up against one of the most changeable situations I think we've ever experienced in our lives. And I think one of the things we also tell our clients is to make sure you take your stakeholders on the journey with you. I think if you are preparing something as a business, as an organization, if you're reacting to something and you go away, silo yourself, and then come back with some sort of result or update, that gap between the way that you communicate can be where trust gets eroded, gets lost. We haven't heard from you. What's going on? How do we not know what to do, et cetera, et cetera? And that's a really, really hard tension between those two ideas around consistency and saying the same thing as much as possible and reacting and taking your stakeholders on the journey with you so they can see that there is transparency, that there isn't always a perfect answer, that there isn't always a great result, but that you are there and happy to be transparent about those challenges in the moment, which I think is a very real and very human way to communicate. And I think it buys you a lot of credibility in of itself. So it's a tough one to answer because there is that tension, and it's no more clear than now during the pandemic that we have that tension. Because as you say, people really struggle with the way the government's communicated because the government's constantly changing direction. I mean, the way that one has to make observations around travel booking is so complicated. I've given up trying to work out what it is now. And I know that there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people who have been impacted by those changes. They've booked a holiday, they're even on the holiday, and their world changes. It's hard. But at the same time, we have to be able to react to a very serious public health issue. So it's tough. It's very tough. I have to sit on the fence a little bit, I think, regarding that one.
No, in terms of what you say there, it's absolutely agreed that it's going to still be a complicated picture heading into autumn. As you say, there's very likely to be a spike in cases. And although compared to last year, the journey back to the office is probably a little bit clearer than it was, it's still very, very difficult to predict. The other problem I think businesses have, or at least a challenge, is that workers are really divided now between those who want different things. Some want to go back to the office full time, some want to continue working from home, some want to try a new form of hybrid working that might not have been open to them before. So how can businesses best get a sense of what their employees are thinking? And then when they are divided, how do they decide who to listen to or where to place their emphasis? And then to what extent should businesses really be led by their employees at all on this sort of issue?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question. It is absolutely paramount that the view of all of your employees be considered when making and looking at these solutions. I mean, as communicators, the beauty of what we do, of course, is that all solutions are found ultimately in the communication of understanding what people want. And I think very clearly trying to marry that against what the overall needs of the organization are. I think if we were to blindly listen just to employees and not have a view as an organization, you'd clearly be misled. But to be able to try and work out again, and this sounds, I guess, in some ways like I'm avoiding the answer, but to try and find some middle ground again between what the organization truly needs, because all organizations do need a culture. They need to build relationships between people in order to thrive, particularly communications organizations, and the individual needs of employees, which I think are more powerful now as a voice than they've ever been. And I think in the future of work, if you like, which is something that you and I have talked about, and us as colleagues have talked about endlessly over the last year, the individual work-life experience of each of our employees is something that we are putting a greater concentration, a greater effort to understand than I think we ever have. And I think that's important to continue doing that on a very forensic and individual level. You know, somebody may be a single parent. They may be working remotely from another market. They may have moved to another part of the country. They may have very serious medical needs. There are lots and lots of things to be considered now. And those are some of those requirements, but there are also wants, desires, ambitions. You know, I want to have a more flexible lifestyle. I want to be able to enjoy my hobbies more, or I want to be able to take my career in a slightly different direction. All of that has to be listened to and then married against the needs of the organization. So I think it becomes, again, about walking the line between the two. And that's where I think you find the best solution, to be a good listener and a really good leader.
As you say there, I mean, there are real challenges on both sides of this. I mean, you could end up in a situation where you have employees who feel that they're not safe, but equally on the other side, you might have some that feel that they've been shut out of physical spaces or they've had the rug pulled out for them and what they expected from their working life. So it's very likely that you will end up in a situation where at least one person is not happy with the outcome, and that becomes a challenge for communications teams. I imagine that in a lot of organizations, they might not have expected the communications teams to be so involved in the back to work process and seeing this as something purely for operations or for other members of the C-suite. Why, in your opinion, should communications teams be absolutely embedded in the back to work process?
For a few different reasons. I think, first of all, because what has become an immensely complicated period in most people's lives in terms of understanding how they engage with employment, but also how they engage with going to and from work, engaging with other parts of their professional and personal lives. Absolute clarity is the one thing people are searching for. And whilst that's very difficult to come by, the communication and the taking people on the journey is absolutely part of that. So communications have to be involved from the very, very beginning, because whatever you conceptualize at an operational level, you then need to immediately think, well, how is this going to land? How are we going to tell our employees about this? How are we going to engage them to get them to buy in to the program that we're suggesting, whatever that may be, is really, really important. And then, so conceptually, you need to be upstream there to help understand how to communicate a program. And then also, as you look to deploy and activate a program, how are you then going to inform your employees and manage them, which is both an operational and a communications concern? And also, how are you going to measure engagement? So how are you going to really understand how what you have conceptually come together to deploy is going to work or has worked, or how it's landing for your employees is really, really important. As well as, of course, what you do will become, whether you like it or not, a signal for future customers, future employees, current employees, and everybody else who engages with your company. And so communicating with it in the right way is going to be arguably a point of reputation for you, either to drive or potentially impact your reputation, depending on the program that you put in place. So again, talking about it in a really compelling, succinct, and powerful way could do you a massive service, particularly in the current war on talent, which, as we all know, in so many sectors, is a massive issue. And so it does have its own inherent value there as well.
So hopefully for everyone listening, it's now very clear that communications needs to be embedded into your back to work process. And as you said, there are so many different forms that this could take, whether it's moving to hybrid working, whether it's allowing much more flexible remote working on a full time, or whether that's back to work. I suppose if we look at those businesses where they do, for whatever reason, need to have their employees physically in a certain location, and those that do need to get people either into an office or a different kind of workspace, they're going to need to communicate different safety measures, different ways of working, perhaps. How can we make sure that the businesses and the brands that maybe we work with, or those that are listening to this podcast, develop campaigns that hit these goals and do so in a way that makes people feel safe and not necessarily lectured to?
I think it has to be all in the listening. If we can demonstrate that a concept or a program that has come out of a really fruitful internal, arguably potentially also external discussion between all the stakeholders that impact an organization, and be a product of that collaboration, that's a very powerful message to send. And I think being creative about that and really stretching yourself is going to be really, really important too. I think it would be easy to probably come to quite a practical solution quite quickly. I think those organizations that will do well out of this will really take the extra time to walk through what is an immensely complex and very emotional subject and come out actually with something that is quite emotional as an output. So what stakeholders will want to see or hear is the impact of the program too. So we can talk till we're blue in the face about the, if you like, features and functions of a back to work program. But actually showing how it has had an impact on an employee's life or a stakeholder's life is going to be where the real power is. And that is not a massively new concept in terms of this so-called use case or case study for what a business does, what an organization does. But that is going to be absolutely key, is to really be able to demonstrate through the voices of those that have been impacted the good that has been done by an organization through a really smart back to work program that's created and has been come to or has been arrived at by a real collaboration.
Yeah, and it's certainly going to be interesting to see how these stories can be communicated, but also how some businesses manage to turn some employees into much bigger advocates as a result of these kind of campaigns. And I think we certainly could start to see more of that, especially as the Back to the Office campaign and its potential success is a bit clearer in the coming months. So far, we've mostly talked about the potential pitfalls that businesses can fall into and things that can go wrong. And of course, it is right that we should look first at that more negative area. However, there is the flip side of this, of the real benefits of getting it right. Those businesses that roll out their new program successfully could very well see themselves as thought leaders in their industries. And you did already mention earlier about how businesses in their actions here are making a clear signal to many other stakeholders outside the business, and that includes some of their close competitors and the rest of the industry. So for those businesses that have found that they've done a very good job of this and that they have managed to hit all their goals, how can they go about sharing their experiences with the industry and with the world?
In many ways, that leadership that can come from the success of a great program. And I think a great program, you know, again, looking in the round, is not just simply about a return to work because of the global pandemic, although that is a huge part of it. There have been massive societal changes and milestones during the last 12 months, not just around the pandemic, as I say, but also around issues of social and racial justice, around education, around travel, around lots and lots of other key parts of our life that have been impacted in many different ways. And therefore, being able to demonstrate a program that is truly strategic in that sense and has answered all the very many layered questions that people, employees, potential employees, are thinking about when it comes to work is going to be absolutely key. And I think visibility of executives in this process is going to be key. You know, when we think about these types, you know, we're making decisions and programs at this level, we want to be seeing the executive class as the responsible party. This has not been delegated down to a smaller department. This is something that the leadership of the company truly cares about, is passionate about. Visible leadership, we know, has always had a massive impact on the reputation of a company, particularly around a creative or innovative program that is really trying to shift the way that a business operates. So absolutely, I think executive communications is absolutely key. And of course, tactically speaking, there are lots of ways that that can come to life, whether it's public speaking or content composition, video and event work, webinar, et cetera, et cetera. There's lots and lots of different tentacles, if you like, for that to exist. But I think really visible leadership is going to be key and a great opportunity. You know, I think we think about all the challenges we've been through last year. And I, as you know, I'm a bit of a glass half full kind of person. I think it's a wonderful chance to turn it into an opportunity. And I think, you know, an organization being really, really proud that it's put its best foot forward should be able to demonstrate that through really strong visible leadership. And I think that's a really important place to start.
No, I mean, it really does present a big opportunity. And so often we're talking to our clients about how they can become thought leaders in different areas. And this is just such a perfect example for those who have campaigns that they are really proud of to go out there into the industry and to tell their story. And it is really, really important that they maximize those campaigns and do see them as an opportunity for their communications campaigns. Now, I always like to finish off our podcast with a similar question about examples out there in the world that really showcase campaigns being done well. So on this one, when it comes to those back to work campaigns, whether it's getting people back into the office, whether it's communicating new ways of working or communicating new safety measures, are there any examples that really jump out to you of businesses doing this well?
I've been considering this at length, and unfortunately, without wanting to sound terribly negative, I don't actually have any examples of a company that has really nailed sort of back to work or back to the office in a strategic, positive, and ultimately successful way. That may well be partly because, of course, we're still in very early days when it comes specifically to office-based businesses where we've been all remote working for such long periods of time. But genuinely, if we look at our own industry, I'm not sure that anybody's necessarily leading the way. There have been a couple of agencies that have gone out with big, colourful campaigns around back to work, and I'm not sure that I've necessarily bought into any of those. And then also, if you look at the larger landscape, there have been lots of examples of very tough challenges that have come about through very public discourse around back to work, whether it's the Goldman CEO, whether it's Google or Apple. Lots and lots of challenges are still being faced where employer and employee are at odds with one another around how back to work should work successfully. So I think, honestly, it's too early to say, but I would certainly say watch this space. I'm sure that we will start to see some good developments, I would hope to think, by the end of this year, beginning of next.
Yeah, it was a difficult question there, because I do agree. It's probably too early for us to say, but definitely a good opportunity for 1, 2, 5 years down the road to be looking back on this and seeing really who in the end did do well and who was actually well ahead of the trend in this area. And one final question, just to wrap us up for today, and then I'll let you go. For anyone who's listening and they want to put together some key takeaways for the rest of their team or for the rest of their organization, what do they need to absolutely action now? What do they need to know about? And what should they go away from this podcast and immediately organize a meeting to discuss?
Yeah, I think actually there are maybe 5 key things to consider around return to work, especially thinking through the lens as a communicator. I think in many ways, it's quite a typical journey, if you like, in terms of preparation and process. So start with the audits, you know, talk to people, understand what's worked, what hasn't worked, really try to pull together those insights, marry that up with the mission. You as a company will have a culture that exists already, and you will want to reflect on a program that best represents that, married with obviously how people perhaps may want to shift or change based on the audit. Getting those points of view from your people and coming up with creative ideas. You know, when we think about our creative process as communicators, we try to do unlimited thinking where we may get a brief and just come up with the most outlandish, crazy, almost unbelievable ideas to give ourselves a real wealth and depth of thinking. And I think that's just as important when it comes to this. And then ultimately, once you've been able to filter that down into a program, what is the way you're going to communicate? Starting with the internal, making sure you've really got buy-in from your internal stakeholders, and then really pushing confidently out those messages to your external ones too. So I think those are the 5 key important factors to be thinking about.
Jim, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. It's such an interesting topic, but we need to leave it there. For all of you joining us for another episode of The Stream UK, thanks for tuning in. As I'm sure you already know, we're a monthly podcast from Allison & Partners, bringing you the latest on marketing and communications. If you like this episode and want to hear more, please hit that subscribe button so you never miss our latest episode. You can find us on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. And you can always find out more at allisonpr.co.uk/stream. Thanks for stopping by.